Hi, my name is Allie Garfinkel. I'm senior finance reporter at Fortune. I write our daily deals newsletter term sheet. And I am here with Rahul Vora, founder and CEO of Superhuman. Rahul, thank you so much for agreeing to hang out with me in front of all these people.
Absolutely, always. Hey, everyone.
Hi. So we have a bit of a task for you. We're going to be talking about something, a mode of communication that touches everyone's lives, but also creates a lot of pain. And we're going to be talking about it in the context of something that we also think about a lot with less pain, I suppose, AI. My task here today is to help Rahul tell you guys the story of Superhuman's AI push. So that being the case, let's all kind of settle in. And I want to start kind of really big picture. So walk me through how AI is changing email broadly and Superhuman specifically.
Okay, so broadly, I think here we all know that AI is changing the way that we work. And email clearly has a huge role to play in that. That's because there's roughly a billion professionals, and on average, we each spend 3 hours a day reading and writing email. So that's 3 billion hours every day, or north of 1 trillion hours every single year that go into reading and writing email. And that's just the time spent.
That's so much time.
I know. But wait till you hear this. On top of that, we each read hundreds and thousands of words. We write tens, if not hundreds of thousands of words. I guarantee you there's many people in this audience who have written several novel worth of emails every single year. And so if you put all of that together, the time that we spend, what we read, what we write, and the way that LLMs work, it's clear that email has a huge role to play in this transformation of our work. So that's email broadly. And then you were asking about Superhuman specifically. Yeah. Okay, so for folks that don't know, Superhuman is the fastest email experience in the world. It works with your existing Gmail or Outlook account, and our customers get through their inbox about twice as fast as before. They reply to their emails 1 to 2 days sooner and save 4 hours every single week. Starting about last year, we began to leverage what today we're calling generative AI. And there's many ways that we do that. I'll talk through three specific, what I think of as flagship features. So the first one that we built, Write with AI, works like this. You simply jot down a few words or a phrase, and we turn that into a fully written email. And it matches the voice and tone of the emails you've already sent, so the email sounds like you do. You can then edit it with AI. You can make it shorter, longer. You can improve your writing. You can fix all the spelling mistakes and grammar. You can, even if you want, translate it into a foreign language. Then towards the end of last year, we launched our second flagship AI feature, which is auto-summarize. So imagine at the top of every conversation, a one-line summary that summarizes potentially dozens of emails. And as new emails arrive, it updates instantly. And if you want to learn more, you can just hit a shortcut, it expands, and then you can see a summary. Now, it turns out that auto-summarize actually changes the way that people work. We were just talking about this backstage, because you learn to read the one-line summary first, and sometimes you don't actually need to read the email. You can just hit done and get on with your day. And then the third thing that we launched, which we actually just launched this week, this went out,
I think, this week.
2 days ago, it's been a little bit of a blur, is instant reply. Imagine waking up to an inbox where every single email already has a draft reply. I know.
So you can clap. I was awed by that idea.
Well, we built that and it works.
It's real, can't confirm.
You would just edit, then send, and sometimes you wouldn't even need to edit. You'd just send. Users of Instant Reply are now writing emails twice as fast, i.e. in half the time as before. So this stuff is real, and it works.
I have to ask, did you expect people to clap at
no.
the idea?
Okay,
no,
yeah.
No, I didn't either, but honestly, it is... It bespeaks, I think, how big of a problem you're looking to solve, that there's like literally spontaneous clapping at the idea of drafted replies to emails. I want to take us back in time a little bit, though, because Superhuman was founded before the AI boom, right? You know, 2014, when did you start thinking about AI?
So, it's funny. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Founded a while ago. The glazed look on my eyes was just time traveling for about 9 years.
I look backstage. I literally said, it's been 10 years. He'd be like, no,
it's
almost
been
10 years.
Very big difference. And if you were to go back to our landing page at that time, we were thinking about it at that time. Mm. One of the core features that we had on the landing page was AI triage. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's funny is that we don't talk about that kind of feature like it's AI anymore. Mm-hmm. We just call that software. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of the phrase by Arthur C. Clarke that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And it occurs to me today that that actually also works as a definition for AI. Mm. In that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from AI. And also, if you were to go back to our fundraising decks from 2014, this is when we were doing pre-seed and seed, they were chock full of AI ideas, many of which we're actually just building now, like this instant reply idea. And that's because, in part, the technology's only just become possible. But also, in part, email turns out to be this absurd grind. I mean, imagine building an email client that works for every single person at every single company. You would have to support Gmail and Google Workspace and Office 365 and Exchange and Mac and Windows and Web and iPhone and Android and every possible permutation and combination of all of those things. And only then would you get to do what some people call the fun stuff, which is what we're talking about here today. And we've now done that, so we can actually get on to transforming what email really is and building this next generation of work.
And this sort of, you started to answer this a little bit, but I'd love to tease this out a little bit further. You know, it sounds like even though you've been thinking about AI in the context of Superhuman for a long time, the relationship to AI has also evolved as more things have become possible. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The definition, what we call AI changes rapidly. I studied computer science. I was an undergrad, 2002 to 2005. Mm-hmm. And chess-solving programs were considered AI at that point. And nowadays, that's just considered a search, right? Mm-hmm. That is a solved problem. So our relationship to what AI is keeps on changing, but that's because the definition of what AI is keeps on changing. And my working definition now is anything that's sufficiently advanced and feels like magic. So yeah, we're always on the forefront of what that is. We actually think about the strategy in terms of three phases. So in phase one, and this is starting last year, so I'm going to talk specifically about generative AI. In phase one, our strategy was to create on-demand AI features, like Write with AI. They're relatively cheap to build. They're relatively cheap to run. Pejoratively, some investors would call this an AI wrapper because you're not really doing anything except wrapping a foundation model. But it was a really good way to get our toes wet and to dabble and to see what the user response would be like. Now, when we saw that users absolutely loved it and the business impact was ginormous, that gave us the confidence and the technical know-how to move on to phase two. And in phase two, we're doing always on AI features. So if you think about the two examples I gave, auto summarize, instant reply, these features are always on and they're always working for you. This is way harder to build, way more ambitious. To give you context, most LLMs are trained on the Enron corpus of emails. The Enron corpus of emails has between 500,000 and 600,000 emails. Our instant reply went out to the early beta users about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we've already processed well north of 300 or 400 million emails just for that feature. So we're talking many, many different orders of magnitude. That's phase two. We're in the full swing of phase two, and we're planting the foundation now for phase three, which is the agentic future. So I really believe that our AI future is when we have AI agents. Imagine AI agents that work autonomously on our behalves. In the case of email, that triage our inbox for us, that schedule meetings for us, that they're doing this end to end. They're writing and sending fully written emails for us. These are agents that can be given a problem, create a plan, break it down into subtasks, deal with ambiguity by going off and finding more information or asking you to clarify, connect with other systems like your calendar or your chat or your text messages, even private APIs for knowledge that your company has. That's where we're headed, and that's what we call the agentic future.
I mean, how far are we from phase three, do you think, out of curiosity?
I'm writing angel checks today in AI agent companies. BetaWorks is hosting an AI agent camp right now. We probably have AI agent founders and investors in the audience. It is, I would guess, if I were to hazard a guess as to when we'll be using these things in production, and by the way, ChatGPT is one of the best examples we have of an AI agent, by next year, those use cases I just outlined, we'll be using them all in production.
Really? So that is incredibly soon.
Incredibly, well, I mean, sure.
You mean incredibly soon relative to time? Time is a social construct.
I don't remember when my feature launched this week. So
yes, yeah, like, yeah. No, it's. I know it happened.
Next year feels very far away.
But kind of to that point, you've launched a lot of these features in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd be curious, how do you determine the success of one of these features?
Yeah, this is like the never-ending debate that I have with the other executives at Superhuman. And I'm an artist by background. I'm a game designer by trade. I'm not really a metrics person. And so for me, a feature is done when it feels awesome, which is very frustrating for everybody else. Fortunately, we've surrounded me with people who can sort of translate that and turn it into, well, what Rahul really means to say is when these metrics are doing these things, that's when it's great.
You have translators. You have metrics translators. That's part of determining success.
Whatever. It seems to work. So to give you some specific examples, the first generative AI feature we created was Write with AI. So again, you hit Command-J. You're like, politely decline this or schedule a meeting for next Friday. And that's all you have to type or say. Hit Enter. And it will turn it into a fully formed email in your own voice and tone. We didn't actually know how beloved that would be when we built that. But it turns out it blows users away. And this is a really big deal, because the biggest challenge we have as AI builders or AI investors is engagement and retention. So I'm sure we've all read the Sequoia essay, I think it was out November last year, that showed engagement and retention are the biggest problems. Thankfully, in Superhuman, perhaps because email is the classic daily use case, we don't see that. So north of 85% of all of our new users are opting into these generative AI features, and they're incredibly sticky. Users now use Write with AI 25 times per week on average, which blew me away. I was like, 25 times?
So that is way more than you were expecting.
Way more than I thought.
What were you expecting?
I don't even know. Like, I was like, it feels great and it looks good. Ship it.
It felt incredible.
It felt incredible, which is my bar. And then to actually see people using it 25 times per week, I was like, holy crap, that's amazing. Instant reply. The thing that went out this week, writing emails in half the time, i.e. twice as fast. I was expecting it to be good, but I wasn't expecting it to be that good. And then we just, over the course of the last few weeks, closed a really big enterprise client, very well-known company. I can't share yet who it is.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
I had to try.
But I appreciate the dig.
Thank you. Thank you.
As part of the sales process, we ran a pilot. And we were able to show to the people that the people in this pilot were responding to their emails 8 to 13 hours sooner. So that is like a whole business day to a business day and a half faster than before. Imagine that happening in your companies. This AI is game-changing. Companies are literally running a day or two faster in their email as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I even said this to you backstage, and I think I've maybe said it to you in different ways as we've kind of gotten to know each other, but I think you're in the time business. You're in the business of giving people back their time. And it sounds like these features have been really sticky, but I also wonder, I mean, I imagine there are a lot of people out here who are maybe interested in building AI products or who are looking at AI products. I mean, is there anything you wouldn't do again?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I mean, if anything, I would just...
At all?
Well, I would do things differently. And the thing I would do differently is do it faster. Mm. Start sooner. Mm. We, last year, February, which is when we started making our generative AI investments, noting we've been doing AI a very long time, but generative AI, we started in February. We were about 100 people. Mm. And in any company of 100 people, it starts way sooner, you're going to have skeptics. Mm. So we had AI skeptics. Mm. And I'm trying to turn the ship of 100 people saying, guys, like, this is here and now. And I personally am going to spend 80 hours a week building this. And I'm going to drive the company in this direction. You're either with me or you're not with me. And some people are like, well, what if it's a fad? You know, what if the feature doesn't turn out to work? You know, what if ChatGPT turns out to be a flash in the pan? You know, all of those kinds of...
Where are we in time as you're having this conversation?
Last February.
Last February. Okay, yeah. So a couple months after ChatGPT is out, but we're not in it.
It had already reached 100 million users. So like, from my perspective, I was like, to the skeptics, what, are you blind? Mm-hmm. Do you not see what's going on? And I would handcraft prompts saying, take instant reply as the example. Mm. You know, here's an email I pasted into ChatGPT. And you know, this is before 3.5 Turbo. And here is my very poorly written prompt, which was basically like, give me 3 diverse responses to this email in 4 words or less. And it wasn't great, but you don't have to be a product builder to squint and think, mm-hmm. okay, if we stick a team on this for 6 months, we can make this incredible. So if I were to do anything different, I think I'd just be a little, we know the phrase, peacetime CEO and wartime CEO, right? I'd be a little less peacetime CEO and a little more wartime CEO and say, this is the way we're going in this direction. But that said, looking over the course of the last year, we've built the most powerful AI email experience that exists, and I'm super proud of what the team has done.
Now, you've also said you're an angel investor, and you said something to me that I've thought about a lot since we were kind of doing the prep call for this. The conventional wisdom suggests that you learn more from failure than success, but you actually said to me that you learn more from successful pitches than failed ones. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from watching successful pitches?
Is that actually the conventional wisdom?
I think the conventional wisdom, I mean, what do you guys think? You know, with the conventional wisdom I've heard is you learn more from failure than success.
I find that very depressing. I don't know if that's actually true in general. I really don't think it's true in startups, either operating or investing. Mm-hmm. Most founders end up failing in like the same 3 or 4 ways. Mm-hmm. They run out of money, they have a co-founder fallout, they don't get to product market fit, or they run out of energy mm-hmm. or time or patience. Most failed pitches, or at least the ones I don't like, are bad for the same set of reasons. They haven't found a real problem, they can't articulate a real solution, the team isn't strong enough, or they're waffly in their answers to questions, mm-hmm. or they can't articulate mm-hmm. a path to a billion-dollar outcome. Mm-hmm. So, I think, especially when it comes to pitches, for sure, the most interesting, exciting pitches, the ones where you learn the most, are the good ones. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are 3 things that I look for. I assume it's the same for all of us here. I do pre-seed and seed, so it's a little bit, you know, it might be different if, mm-hmm. or it is different if you're doing growth stage. Mm-hmm. But at pre-seed or seed at least, number one, does the founder know how to make something that people want? This is mm-hmm. the Paul Graham axiom. But the flip side to that also, do they know how to make people realize they want it? Do they have an unfair marketing advantage, community, sales? Like that, there has to be a distribution advantage that they have. Number 2, mm-hmm. do they exhibit extraordinarily levels of grit, which I define as passion and perseverance? And then number 3, can they, not you, the investor, it's a very classic early investor mistake to do, can they articulate a path to $1 billion? Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes you're in a great market and you have a good founder and you can see the path to $1 billion outcome, but they can't articulate it. That's actually a very risky investment to make. Mm. They have to be the ones to articulate it. And if those 3 things are hit, then yeah, I mean, everything's on fire, you're learning, mm-hmm. they're learning. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of people you want to work with.
Well, and kind of sort of to that end, that sort of gets us to where I want to end here, which is, you know, the path to $1 billion, those high conviction ideas. You have some pretty defined ideas about where work could go, where email could go. So tell us a little bit about what the future of superhuman looks like and superhuman AI.
Well, with superhuman and with AI, we really are just scratching the surface. Despite having built what is today the best AI email experience in the world, we're going to keep on pushing. And zooming out, what we're building is the best, most powerful, fastest productivity and communication suite for high-performing companies. But zooming out even beyond superhuman,
let's get really existential.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to get existential. Well, it depends on how you take it. But I want to go back to this agentic vision for our AI future. Mm. I really believe that all of us are going to have an AI agent, actually in practice, probably multiple AI agents. And as a reminder, these agents, they're capable of receiving goals and independently and autonomously working on those goals and breaking those goals, like I said, down into plans and subtasks and asking you for clarifying information and connecting with other systems. And because those AI agents work with natural language, you can literally just converse with them.
You can literally talk to them.
You can talk to them. You can actually speak with them. And the crazy thing is they can speak with each other despite an integration not having been made specifically. So let's take an example. I'm going through family planning right now, and let's say I want to know, should I change my health insurance because we know there's hopefully a pregnancy in the not-too-distant future. So this is a real thing. So last week, I had to get on the phone with HR at Superhuman, with my benefits provider, with a myriad other people, look up things in Rippling.
This sounds like a logistical nightmare.
It was a logistical nightmare. Yeah. It was awful. I'm like, God, why am I doing this? Here's how it will work in the future. You'll pick up your phone and you'll pull up your executive AI assistant, which is a bit of a mouthful, so I call it the EAI, the executive AI for short. And much like a real assistant, this thing knows about you. It, you know, maybe knows your W-2 income, it has access to other information, and I would just ask it, hey, when is open enrollment next for me? And it's maintaining a roster of all of the other AI agents it knows. And so what it would do is it would go ping my Rippling AI agent and say, hey, Rahul has this question, what's the answer? They authenticate so they know that this is secure. And it would say, hey, your next open enrollment is on May the 24th. I would then say, okay, I'm thinking, or we're thinking about pregnancy, what's the best plan for me? And it would infer by that, well, what we mean here is probably cheaper. It then goes away and negotiates with the agent, and it clarifies, is what you meant cheaper? And what's your age? That would know that. What's your partner's age? It may not know that. So it's starting to collect information. And they then do this handshake, which is replacing weeks of phone calls and meetings, and it gets back to me, and it says, okay, here's the plan that you should enroll. Here is when you should enroll. Your deductible, which you'll fly through, will be X. Your copay will be Y. This is what you need to do. So replacing weeks of work with an instantaneous interaction.
And that's where the future is headed. I hope you're right.
I will.
Thank you so much, Rahul.
Thank you.